And we're heading over now to the United States of America to speak to Jamie Metzl on his book, Hacking Darwin. Good morning to you, Jamie. How are you? Oh, so let me say hello again. Sorry, that's my fault. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
Good to have you on. I saw a TED Talk with you quite recently, and also the book, of course,
right.
Hacking Darwin, which is available now. And really, you talk about something that's maybe quite scary for some people to take in, and where the future is going to take us with technology. So maybe just in a nutshell, just give us a synopsis on the book and on the TED Talk, and what you're expecting in the next few years that we can see when it comes to technology and genetics and all that.
Yeah. So thanks so much. Yeah, the book is just out. It's called Hacking Darwin, Genetic Engineering and the Future of Humanity. And in it, I explain why we humans are at the beginning of a genetics revolution that's going to fundamentally transform our healthcare, the way we make babies, the nature of the babies we make, and ultimately our evolutionary trajectory as a species. It's probably the biggest thing. It's for sure the biggest thing that will happen to any of us in our lives, but maybe over time in the history of our species. And the basic summary of the technology, which really anybody can understand, is that for about 4 billion years, we humans have evolved by this set of rules of random mutation and natural selection we call Darwinian evolution. And now, for the first time and forever, from this point on, we will take increasing control of all of biology, including our own. And that's really going to change everything. And if we aren't ready for what's coming, we aren't going to be able to have the inclusive, engaged conversation about how we handle these unbelievably powerful technologies in ways that enhance our humanity rather than diminish it.
And you mentioned, I heard you say on the TED Talk, that we kind of expect, you know, an iPhone to be better year on year, and technology to evolve in that respect and to improve, and yet it's something we're not fully aware of as humans, that this is going to be something that we can improve. That's something a revelation, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, we've internalized this message that our technology is variable, that every new generation, every new iteration of a phone or a TV or a computer is going to be better in important ways than the last. And yet we feel, because of our experience, our lived experience, that Homo sapiens is the end-all and be-all. And for us, it is, because our parents and grandparents were Homo sapiens, our kids and grandkids will be Homo sapiens. And yet our biology is more variable than our information technology. I mean, how else could we have gotten from single-cell organisms almost 4 billion years ago to the complex beings we are today? And we've only been Homo sapiens for around 300,000 years, and only for the last 40,000 years have we been the only humans on this planet. So there's a lot of change that's coming. That was always going to happen. What's new is that we are developing the tools that will allow us to push our evolutionary process in major ways. But in the very near term, this is going to fundamentally change just the way we think about biology, which will translate into the way that we do healthcare. We'll move from a model of generalized healthcare based on population averages to precision healthcare based on each person's individual biology, to predictive care and predictive life, where you're going to know from the moment of your birth some pretty significant aspects of how your life might play out, which will create a lot of opportunities to address problems or embrace opportunities. Mm.
Can you just maybe explain in layman's terms, because I think I struggle to get my head around this sometimes, not being a scientist myself, a radio presenter. What is genetic engineering and how does that work?
So I think most of your readers know that the blueprint of our humanity is set in our genetic code. So you get, we humans, our genes, we have about 6 billion base pairs organized into 23 chromosomes. I think everybody gets that.
Yeah.
And that constitutes your genome. And everybody has a unique genome, and it's what makes you, you.
Yeah.
And now we are increasingly developing, and have been for many decades, the ability to manipulate and now to edit the genome to make some very significant changes. And so there are different levels of application. Right now, the most prominent is in research science, where we are increasingly understanding how the genome works by and doing many different things, but one of the most prominent is by knocking out certain genes in animals and seeing what impact that has. And then that is going to move us toward our understanding of how we apply genetic science and things like gene therapies, where you take cells out of a person's body, of a person, for example, with cancer, and you give them cancer-fighting superpowers and put their own cells back, or what's called precision pharmacology, where if you're going to have a drug prescribed to you, you have that drug prescribed based on your individual biology, so it's more likely to work. And then we're going to have a lot of information through direct-to-consumer genetics. A lot of people have sent in their mouth swab to companies like 23andMe, but the information that you get back is not that actionable. But increasingly, it will be actionable, and we're going to we'll have to figure out how we think about that information, and then it's going to transform how we make babies, and the summary of it is moving toward the end of sex for procreation. We'll have sex for all the other wonderful reasons, but it will seem increasingly dangerous to people to conceive of babies through sex, because if conception happens outside of the human, it allows us to apply science in ways that will very significantly reduce risks of some terrible and deadly genetic diseases. But that same process will allow us to select other traits that are not disease related.
And now, this is where the moral argument comes in, I suppose. And I'm just getting that, you know, when you want to maybe reformat the computer and it says, are you sure you want to do this? because it's such a vital part of the computer that you're mucking around with. And I wonder, for me, in layman's terms, we're playing around with something that's very fundamental. Like you say, it's who we are. We've got to get this right, haven't we? We can't afford to make mistakes on this sort of thing.
That's exactly right. I mean, we need to be extremely careful, extremely cautious, extremely prudent, and extremely inclusive, because there's no one standard for what constitutes a life and a valuable life. So we really need to be extremely careful. The ethical issues that are raised by these technologies are absolutely monumental. But having said that, the science is advancing. We can't pretend that it's not. And so if we want, which is certainly what I want, that for our best values to be woven in to every level of the decision-making process about how we move forward, we really need to have a global conversation about what are those values and how can we apply them. And right now we have so many people who are focusing on all kinds of stuff that's marginally important, but how we deal with the three big challenges, maybe four big challenges of our era, which are genetics, AI, climate change, and nuclear proliferation, that's going to determine what happens with humans on Earth. And that seems really important. And so that's why I really appreciate being on shows like yours to help spread the word, to say, this is really important. Everybody needs to be part of the conversation. You can't be part of the conversation if you aren't informed. But then one of the things that I'm working on is saying, how can we build an infrastructure that can help facilitate this kind of global dialogue, national and global dialogue that we badly need?
Yeah, and I mean, you talk on a TED Talk about how it'll impact our health. And at the moment, actually, it's not a health system, it's a sickness system. It's we're kind of responding to sickness rather than kind of preempting it.
Yes, so we have what we call healthcare is really sick care, that you show up at your hospital, your doctor's office, and you have some kind of symptom. That symptom could have been germinating in you for many, many decades, but you don't know it. And when this symptom shows up, it could be that there's nothing you can do. And so why wouldn't we want to have information from as early as possible, as early as just after our birth or even before, that says that you have this increased risk. You have an increased risk of getting breast cancer. Therefore, you should start getting tested 10 or 20 years prior to when a person who doesn't have your genetic susceptibility to breast cancer. I think we're going to want to have that kind of information. And that's, that kind of application is what's going to push us toward wanting to understand more and more about how our genomes function. And when we have that information, we are going to apply it.
Yeah.
We're going to apply it in the areas I described, direct-to-consumer genetics, and transforming the way we do assisted reproduction.
And I suppose there's two extremes. There's there'd be those on the religious side of the argument who would say that we're playing God here with some of this stuff. And then further down, you'd have those who are very positive and very zealous about what this can achieve. And I suppose you've got to remain balanced here and approach it in a balanced point of view. I mean, where are you on the spectrum?
Yeah. So I guess both parts of that question. Certainly, there are people from on one side, the made religious fundamentalists or whatever you want to call them, people who say that this is playing God. And you have the biohacking transhumanists who say that Homo sapiens was always a buggy model and we need to fix it and people should be absolutely free to do it. And my first point is that we need to have a table that's big enough for everybody to be part of this conversation, because if anybody is outside, that's much worse for everybody. We are all one species. We need to structure a dialogue that includes everybody. But what I would say to people at each end of the spectrum, for the people who are those who say we shouldn't play God, that train has left the station. If you mean by not playing God, just living lives as we were before we had technology. I mean, we lived in caves. We were ravaged by predators and diseases. When we developed medicine and agriculture and electricity and all these things that have redefined us as a species, we were playing God. And so that's what humans do. We just have always acquired more and more powerful technologies in order to do it. But every time we immunize our kids, we're playing God. Every time we save somebody with a surgery who otherwise would have died, we're playing God. So I just think that to say that we're playing God, like if you want to go and live out in a rainforest on your own and feel like that's the way we ought to do it, that's fine. But that's not, in my view, a fully defensible argument. On the other side, there are the transhumanist biohackers who say, well, this, anything goes. And that's not an acceptable view. What we're talking about is the future of life. We're all interconnected. If somebody changes the biology of their future children, that is my interest, because what if my children and their children procreate? That person has impacted me. So neither extreme is acceptable, and we have to find a middle. And it's my personal view. Your second question is that this is coming. Certainly comfortable with aspects of it. I mean, why, if we could save people from terrible, deadly genetic diseases, why wouldn't we? If we could give people predictive information that could help them live healthier longer, if we could help people in their 90s have 5 more healthy years before getting dementia, why wouldn't we? And I think we should. We need to be careful.
It's a fascinating subject, it really is, and we're just really skimming the surface here, time-wise, yeah. Not allowing us to really delve in. But
that's why I wrote the book, so yes. Anybody who likes what they're hearing can get everything. Now, go on. I'm sorry.
I was just about to plug your book, Jamie. So here we go.
Yes.
It's Jamie Metzl. The book's called Hacking Darwin, and it's a fascinating viewer into what the future may well hold and looks like it will hold for us. And we've not even talked about maybe countries that maybe will use this technology and other countries that maybe won't for other reasons and the differences that may bring. But there's a lot of fascinating topics in there on this. And it's called Hacking Darwin. It's available on our website if you go to our website, which is tre.radio. Jamie, thanks for coming on. Appreciate your time this afternoon.
My pleasure.
And all the very best. And do let us know if you're working on something new, and we'll do that. Also, there's a TED Talk as well online that people can watch if they want to get a bit of a kind of a 15 to 20 minute view of the book. But the book's called Hacking Darwin. Thank you, Jamie.
My pleasure. Take care.
All the very best.